Melissa, do you remember when I'd said, "Hey, I know we need a third host. I think James might be a good idea because he's got all this experience and whatnot." You remember when I said that?
Yeah.
I should have thought it through more, I think.
Probably should have, but it's too late now. Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up for the sext. It's the Apropos of Nothing podcast.
With your hosts,
Salsa, and unfortunately,
James.
And Jenna.
Yeah.
I'm here for this. Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Happy Labor Day, you guys. How was your 3-day weekend at the Renaissance Festival?
Oh, I want to congratulate Eric Thompson.
That was a fantastic fucking joke.
That joke,
it was,
so it was like,
sad.
I described it as like a finely crafted Swiss watch of a joke.
I seriously was just like, that's it, I retire from comedy, because that is, we can go no further.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah.
The very deepest level of comedy.
And to those who don't know what we're talking about, it's... You really need to be a Rennie to even understand.
Mm-hmm.
And if I need to explain it, then you don't understand. And if I don't need to explain it, you already heard the joke.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe.
The smallest bit of background, though, for those that don't know, is that during the Renaissance Festival, the Labor Day weekend is, in fact, a 3-day weekend. And since the Renaissance Festival isn't happening this year, we did not do it. This is the first Labor Day that I have in my memory where I'm not out at Fest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just hung around and watched Stargate, and I was like, "Well, am I doing Labor Day right?"
Yeah, no, my
this is pretty much it. I'm like, "What? This is weird."
Like talking to my wife, you know, she was saying that she has never not been at the Renaissance Festival on Labor Day.
Right.
Literally,
exactly.
Literally, yep, in her entire sense, since she was 2 months old.
Yep.
To today, never.
Mm-hmm.
Not
yeah.
once. So
same.
Yep. Yeah. No, I know. I'm just like, this is the conversation. I'm saying this is the conversation I was having with her, and so she was saying that she was just like, I don't know what people do on Labor Day.
Are there decorations?
I don't. It's been 20 years for me. I don't know either.
I mean, in Russia, they had flags.
Yeah, just like, is there a parade? I don't. Is there
in China,
a Labor
they had
Day
a parade.
Parade? Is that a thing? I don't.
I
don't actually know. It's been so long.
I mean, normally there's a guy in a red hat.
Yeah, telling us about how many people died. Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
Like, I found
out... they don't do that in other parts of the...
No,
the,
I found
the
out most people don't have that, and I was confused.
That's weird. That's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently he comes over midnight, doesn't give them a speech, and then leaves them barbecue or something? I'm confused about the particulars.
I have no...
Something
I,
like that.
Yeah.
We should...
Like, I know different subcultures have different celebrations, mm-hmm. but... That one seemed weird to me to not have that. Yeah.
We should put a pause just on this for a second until we tell everybody what we're drinking.
Ooh.
Yeah. I am starting to run low on my alcohol stash, and I've decided not to buy more alcohol till I get rid of all the alcohol that I have. I'm currently left with I just clear it all out and then we'll see what happens. So, what I have left at this point, mind you, I have not bought booze since the beginning of March when I went, fuck this shit, if we're going to be in quarantine, I'm going to be drunk, and bought all of the booze. So, what I have left at this point is Fireball whiskey, honey whiskey, some gin that's going to James because I believe it's either his or Bren's that was left here.
Nice.
And a little bit of vodka. That's it for alcohol in my house. Oh, and there's a couple of cans of beer in the fridge. Whatever. So, just things people left here ages ago. I don't know if beer goes bad, but that's not good, regardless.
I mean, so, yeah, for you, instantly. Yeah.
Nope. So what I made myself tonight was Fireball and cranberry juice. I'm about to find out what this is like. It actually smells pretty okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So, yeah, so let's try. I mean, cinnamon and fruit. It's a good combo in general.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, I like that.
Yeah?
It's okay.
Cool.
It's not a magical blend, but it's definitely a drinkable blend.
Yeah.
I bet if I heated up the cranberry juice and had, like, so it was more of like a mulled thing, that would be good.
I was actually going to suggest the Fireball and the honey whiskey in a glass of hot tea would probably be pretty tasty.
Yeah, well, that's when I did the hot toddy last week. That was the honey whiskey.
Oh, okay.
I mean, especially after this long weekend.
Yeah.
It was pretty exhausting.
Yeah.
Yes, very actually.
It was for some people, but yeah.
I am... As Jenna is also, I am drinking the very last little bit of grape-flavored vodka. It's Purple Wave vodka. This is not good, but it is everything that it advertised.
Purple?
It is purple. It is flavored, and it is vodka. So, those things in that order. And I've added that to Pepsi. And well, we're going to find out.
Oh, God. All right.
I don't know if it makes a grape ape or something like that, but we're about to find out.
All right, well, drink it.
That is surprisingly good.
Even
with that cheap, shitty grape vodka. Yes.
What does it taste like? I mean, like, good in what way? Does it taste like hops? Because then you know you're wrong. But
no, it it tastes like one of those grape freeze pops, but it's got like a smoky darkness to it. Like almost like honey was added to a grape freeze pop.
So a grape freeze pop after you've had a cigarette.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Or like caramel, which I guess it would make sense because most colas have like a caramel flavoring coloring to them. So, but yeah, it's like, it's like that Laffy Taffy grape, but with caramel.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't mind this at all. All
right.
It's pretty fucking tasty.
Sounds
okay.
Good enough. I am having an RBG.
A Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Mm-hmm. But not a Ruth Bader Ginsburg, an RBG. Which stands for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but it is not a Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
I feel lied to.
Yep. It is ginger ale, rum, Cointreau, and lemon juice.
Okay.
It kind of sounds like a Moscow Mule, almost. But
similar.
It looks cool.
Similar, but
yeah. How is it?
Quite good.
Excellent.
He just said quite good. Yeah. Are we getting leg things?
Possibly. We are.
Okay.
Yeah.
This will be fun then.
Yeah, I mean. So
it's fine.
Every Friday, Saturday.
Grow here.
Every Saturday night. Myself and some various friends of ours get together and we play Jackbox games.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
The person with the the Xbox has a Twitch channel that he streams the screen across, and then the rest of us just play on our devices as we Zoom meet with mm-hmm. each other. The problem is that Twitch stream has like a 3-second lag for a lot of us.
Oh, sure.
So they have a 3-second advantage on the rest of us for all of the prompts and everything like that. But it's really frustrating at times because you'll be like, I've got 10 seconds left to finish typing this, and in reality, you just have 7. Which doesn't sound like a huge difference, but when you're down to the wire and you're like, I gotta get this last thing in, and you glance up and it's 5 seconds left, I can finish typing this word in 5 seconds. No, you don't. You're out of time.
Oh,
sorry.
No.
Which can be frustrating. And there are some games where speed is of the essence. You know, where you're competing against other people and you need to do something quickly.
Sure.
And that's frustrating, but we've just kind of figured out what games we can do with the lag without it being too effective. But lag is boo.
Lag is boo.
Yeah. Why is it boo. In this century that we live in where we, you know, don't have to take 2 months to cross the plains that we can, you know, have 3-second lag? Boo.
Yeah, we can get a... I fucking remember during the Olympics in Britain, they were talking about like, oh, sure, we can get photographs and chemical analyses of soil samples from the Mars lander in 14 minutes or something, but it takes us 8 hours to get the Olympics.
Yeah.
Across an ocean, right.
Right.
Oh well. Oh, well. What y'all been up to? All right, I'll go first.
Go for it,
Salsa. Never mind, then.
Oh, I'm sorry. I waited. I realize now that it was probably the lag that we just discussed. But
it was probably the lag.
But I was just like, anyone?
That's why I pointed it out.
Okay, Jenna, go first.
I actually was volunteering.
All right, James, go first.
And now you are both frozen on my screen, and if you can see me or hear me.
Yes, we can hear
you. I can hear you.
Yes.
I just moved downstairs.
Cool.
I moved apartments to a lower floor. Yes, it smells less on the main floor. And so it is a surprisingly massive endeavor. And I think... part of it is that when you have it in mind that you can just carry stuff downstairs, you maybe don't do things the same way that you would if you were going to be putting every goddamn thing into a truck.
Right.
And driving it across town.
You feel like you can piecemeal it a little bit more.
Yeah, which is dangerous.
Yeah.
Because there's not that much time before it has to be clean and emptied out and all of that business, you know? So that's exciting. But the new place is pretty glorious, and I think it'll be a lot better once it isn't just, you know, a bedlam of everything we own assembled into a scale model of the city.
Out of curiosity, how so? Just because, I mean, I assume that all the apartments are the same size and probably the same layout? No. Oh, okay.
No, each of the apartments has a slightly different layout because this building was put up in the late 1940s, early 1950s. So everything's just like very slightly different. But then we moved from a one bedroom to a two bedroom.
Oh, okay.
Which I think gives us at least 1.5 times the amount of space, if not slightly more.
Yeah.
So we're pretty enthused about this.
Good.
We're looking forward to having separate offices, very particularly.
Yes.
Will be very nice. Also, there's enough counter space in the bathroom for two people instead of like,
ooh,
you know, a thimble of space. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just kind of, you know, I'm really pleased with how things have come together. We have found the perfect space for the hutch that Salsa gave us, which has become the liquor cabinet.
Excellent.
Yes.
I have no idea what that's like.
Yes. But it was a pretty intense amount of work. Even with having hired movers, I ended up getting 7,000 steps and 30 flights of stairs up both Friday and Saturday. And then probably, or what, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then today I'm approaching that amount. So
I believe this. Yeah.
It's a lot. There's a lot going on. It's also like we now live on the corner of the building where the intersection is where a lot of car accidents happen. So that's been pretty thrilling.
Oh, you got live TV.
There's something like that. Yeah. Yeah, immediate news.
Yeah.
So but it's really nice, and it has afforded us the things that we disagree on separately. Bryn's bedroom is full of windows, just like something like 6 or 7 windows. The living room is just chock full of fucking windows. And then my bedroom has one, which I am going to cover with blackout curtains and never open, except to stick an air conditioner in it.
Seems like what I would have done, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm very excited about the prospect. Man. But, yeah, that ended up meaning that we needed some supplies, which entailed an IKEA run, which is, I want to say, at the best of times with no pandemic, frustrating, but
really?
Right now is terrifying.
Really? You don't like IKEA runs?
Oh,
I love
God,
IKEA
I hate
runs.
Them.
Okay.
But they are definitely a place that disagreements happen.
Really?
And if you have gone through the entire showroom, and you have looked at all of the things, and you have had discussions about different pieces and decided what people do like and do not like, and then you are then down in the area where you pick things out
right.
off of shelves and put them into the baskets. By the time that you are done with that, you are, if you have not taken time to like stop and go into the restaurant and eat and rest, you're gonna be a little, you know, fucking crabby pants.
Are you really?
By the time you get down there to the border between the grand furniture warehouse and the, you know, simple supplies area.
I can't say that I've ever had that problem.
Oh my God.
Well, that's okay. But yeah, I have very definitely experienced that in, again, the best of times, that even when you love someone and agree with them on almost everything, that IKEA will find the niche in your armor and pry at it a little.
Interesting.
No, oh, I really like this couch. You would. What is that supposed to mean? That's it's very you. What I oh.
Yeah.
So yeah, that. And starting with that and ending with "and your mother,"
okay, see, I think the difference is Raiderly and I are honest with each other, so
yes, that
that
must be the difference.
Yeah.
So
yes, I'm sure you and Raiderly have never snipped at each other, even when you are in agreement and communicating accurately.
I feel like a lot of our IKEA trips end up fine. I honestly can't think of any times.
You know, ours usually do too. I love going to IKEA, but I do recognize that at the end I am fucking wrung out. And again, that is before all of this. That is in the before times. This
it's entirely possible that you care more
a lot
about things.
It's also possible that Raiderly is frustrated and you are not.
That's possible too.
That you are just oblivious.
No, that's entirely possible. I'm more than happy to acknowledge that this is more than likely a possibility. I just usually get through IKEA going, okay, let's go home. La la la.
I feel claustrophobic at IKEA.
That's fair.
Like
that's fair.
That's my biggest issue. I've never really gone shopping with somebody at IKEA where my opinion was necessary. Okay. There you are, I think.
Yeah.
All right, James, anything else?
No, I was going to say thank you to Jenna for the baskets that, like the little shower accoutrement baskets idea that she has employed in her home, because it led us to a very successful solution for our own shower toiletry needs.
Okay.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Yeah. Very glad.
Do you want to go next, Jenna, or me?
Yeah, because I'm dovetailing on that.
Okay.
On Saturday, I was unable to assist much in the moving of Bryn's stuff. So there is, because Bryn and I were roommates, there's Bryn's stuff in the place that we share. And then also there were some things at Joe's, because not everything fit. And there was a bunch of, I don't even know exactly how that happened, but there was a bunch of stuff at Joe's that needed to get out. So I was at Joe's, and I was all set to help get things out of Joe's basement and into Bryn's moving truck. And that morning, I'm like, well, I'm going to do my laundry before Bryn gets here. And I fell down some stairs.
Oof, yeah.
And I scraped my knee.
Oh.
It was only a couple of stairs. It wasn't like the last time I fell down all of the stairs. Jeez. And lost several brain shells, yes. but yeah, I kind of fucked up my knee a little bit. So I basically sat outside and watched them work, which was mildly delightful, actually.
Hmm.
Sometimes it's nice to watch other people work. So I kind of sort of helped with that a little bit, at least in providing a vehicle for donations, because I'm going to be making a trip to donate stuff anyway. So Bryn loaded any donation stuff into my car, and I'll be getting those out next weekend. The other thing that happened that I'm super excited to talk about is Joe's neighbors are way too good to him, and he does not deserve them. Friday, I had just gotten to Joe's, and we're hanging out chit-chatting, and Miss Gloria comes up the road, and she has corn and like onions and stuff, like extras that she got from somewhere, and so she just gives a bag to Joe and a bag to his next door neighbor, who also happened to be outside, and she just shows up and hands out food, right? Like she had some spare and she handed it out, and I was like, Joe, your neighbors are really cool. And Joe is like, what can I give to this person in return? And she's like, he was like, Miss Gloria, have you ever had Gates barbecue sauce? Because Joe is from Kansas City. And every time he goes down there, he brings up a carton or a crate of Gates barbecue sauce.
As it should be.
He is a barbecue sauce. He is a true Kansas City barbecue connoisseur, and Gates is the best sauce.
If one were to want to procure a bottle of such, how would one go about doing this?
Talk to Joe.
Got to talk to Joe.
Means I have to talk to someone. All right, I'll do it.
Well, yes, unfortunately for Salsa. Drop off for you anyway.
Unfortunately for Salsa, life is a multiplayer game.
Boo. Anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, I think you can also order it online for delivery, maybe. But like, yeah, it's mostly
from Joe?
Gates is in the city, not from Joe. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, so like, and they're just being good neighbors, right? And the next door neighbor lady is like, "Well, Miss Gloria, I've got some cuttings for various herbs and stuff. If you want some of that," so like his neighborhood, like they're just passing out food and sharing various, you know, things
awesome.
That they have, and just being good
nice.
Neighbors. And. I was seriously like, Joe, your neighbors are wonderful and far too good to you. And he's like, yes, this is accurate. And then so shortly earlier today, before I left Joe's, there was a knock on the door, and it was Brenda from across the street. And Brenda was like, I just wanted to drop off this food, like I made some extra, and I wanted to make sure you got some, because, like, you know, a couple weeks ago, you brought me a bottle of Manischewitz, and that was just super kind of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know your girlfriend's still here, because her car's out front, so you should make sure to share this food with her. And it's like, number one, his neighbors know me and my car. I'm
yeah,
a little creeped out.
Yeah, it sounds like small-town America in the middle of the city.
In the middle of the city. And it's great. And so Brenda, who is, by the way, she's the one that basically complains to the city about any issues that the neighborhood block area is having.
Oh, she's a busybody.
They had,
So she's a busybody.
She's not a busybody. She is a
civically minded.
Oh.
Let me give the full background on this story,
okay,
though.
Okay.
CenterPoint Energy comes out to change up some boxes, like they want to be able to get the readings from the outside instead of having to go to the inside of the buildings.
Sure.
Which is fine. Great. Cool. There's COVID. Why go inside more places than you have to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just set this up now. And they end up digging up a bunch of sidewalk stuff to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say they're not going to replace this because their contract got canceled. Mm-hmm. And Brenda was like, bitch, no. And starts calling the city, calling CenterPoint, calling the contractors, just calling around and making all of the complaints. And then she would message the rest of the neighborhood to be like, hey, y'all, I need you to just message this person with all of your complaints because we're going to get this done. And basically, they were going to, number one, get charged for the boxes that CenterPoint decided they were going to put in.
Oh.
And she was like, no, nobody agreed to this. And then number two, the city wanted to charge them to get the sidewalk replaced, and Brenda said, no, we didn't
mm-hmm.
agree to this either.
Mm-hmm.
So she, and she said, she's like, if you guys notice anything else, like CenterPoint fucking you over or anything, you let me know, because I'm in a complaining mood, and I'm going to go complain. Like, I'm just fired up and ready to go. So that's Brenda. She's not really a busybody. But she is fiercely protective of her little neighborhood nook.
All right, and we're back. Sorry about that, everybody. We had to take a momentary breather there. We had a little bit of an emergency pep-up, but we are back at it. Jenna, sorry to interrupt you.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying something about Brent.
God, if it's not one thing interrupting me,
I know,
another.
Right?
Like, what the fuck, you guys? Oh. Anyway. So anyway, yeah. Brenda is not a busybody. She's not like, I'm going to get into everybody's business. She's not a gossip. She's not a what. She is just, she is using her personally driven desire to complain about things.
She's a mover and a shaker.
Manner. Huh?
She's a mover and a shaker.
Kind of.
A Leslie Nope.
She doesn't do anything. She's part of this problem with the City Walk is that she has limited mobility.
Gotcha.
So when all of the sidewalk was torn up and nobody was going to fix it, she went, whoa, yeah.
I see.
So, yeah, a part of it was that. But the other thing is that that's where she feels empowered.
Sure.
Is to be able to call people and complain about things. So she was like, y'all need anything else? I'm on a roll right now. Just give me things to complain
There's
about.
COVID. I'm not going stuff. Anywhere else. Let me get shit done.
Right, yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, the sidewalks did get filled.
Well, there you go.
And as far as we know, nobody on the block is paying for it. So, hooray. Way to go, Brenda. But anyway, as kind of a thank you for all of that and just to kind of help out, Joe brought Brenda some Manischewitz because she talked about at one of their block parties how much she loves drinking Manischewitz.
Huh.
Right. And, yeah, so he brought her some of that at their little area block. The thing about Joe's neighborhood, by the way, he lives in, I will continue to tell Eric that this is a cul-de-sac and he will continue to argue against me, but there is a little turny bit at the end of his block. So his road doesn't go all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
That's the meanest thing I've ever heard you say about someone.
That sounds like a cul-de-sac to me. I don't...
Eric says it is not a cul-de-sac because it's not in the suburbs and there aren't, like, houses around the little turny bit, really. Mm-hmm.
But it's...
It's more of, like, the backside of a bunch of business buildings.
It's still a...
I don't know. I have not looked
out. It's a single exit roundabout.
Right. Anyway. Joe lives on a cul-de-sac. And but it actually came about because I was trying to convince Eric that he should move into the city. And he's like, there's no cul-de-sacs. And I'm like, this is a cul-de-sac. What are you talking about? This isn't working. This is the wrong tactic. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go anywhere. Anyway, so yeah, but they have, what they do is they have little block parties every few weeks or so. Joe pulls out a grill. People bring stuff. There's grilling, there's drinking in the cul-de-sac. They block off the road. And they just socially distance a neighborhood block party kind of thing and make sure to check in on each other. Make sure everybody's doing all right. And this kind of started because of all of the chaos that was happening earlier. So yeah, Brenda was talking about all of that and then talked about how much she loved Manischewitz. So Joe brought her Manischewitz to the last block party. So tonight, Brenda delivered some homemade mac and cheese, mashed potatoes, and chicken. Deep fried chicken and some spaghetti sauce, like homemade spaghetti sauce. And yeah, like it was super sweet. It was very, very kind. So yeah, and I told Joe, I'm like, you don't deserve your neighbors. And he's like, you are so right about that. Anyway, so yes, that's the story about Joe's neighborhood and how his neighbors are all too good for him.
Okay.
Fair enough.
I am on a website for realtors.
Oh.
And the difference between a cul-de-sac and a dead end is a cul-de-sac has a circular end with which to turn around in.
Oh. So I am technically
knighted.
According to a realtor, you are correct.
Yes. Take that, Eric Thompson.
The cul-de-sac has a circular end, meaning you can turn your car around in one seamless action instead of having to pull an Austin Powers 40-point turn.
Yep. I mean, and I can do that in my vehicle.
Yep. The dead end street ends in a straight line, whereas a cul-de-sac has a circular end that allows one to drive around in one continuous motion. There.
Yep.
Which Eric is this, Thompson? Or
yeah, Thompson.
Oh, no, he's wrong. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh.
Here's the French.
Cul-de-sac is French. He should know.
Yeah, it means ass in the bag.
Yep.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
So yeah, there was that, and then there was more Stargate. I'm almost done with season 3.
Woo!
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. I know. We're cranking through it. Good. It helps that I had some actual PTO that I took, so we got through a whole bunch there, and then this weekend was a 3-day weekend, so
right.
Got through a bunch more there. So, yeah.
All right. I spent the weekend being productive, obviously. I'm getting an echo from one of you. I'm not sure.
I am also hearing an echo.
It is probably me.
Okay.
I don't know how to fix it on my end, though.
Okay. It comes and goes, so I'm not hearing it now, but oh well. Anyway,
Jenna had a day
so
like that once?
On Saturday, so first of all, I have to back up a little bit and say that my wife and I went in halvesies with her sister and her husband to buy a fruit press.
Like the Apple Tribune?
What?
Oh my god.
I see what he did. Okay, ignoring it. No,
that was like you didn't hear it, and I was like, I'm not going to be the one to repeat it.
Grape Gazette.
No, I heard what he said. It just made no sense. It still doesn't. Anyway, no, we went in halvesies on an actual fruit press. So Saturday, what we did is we went to my wife's mother's house. She has two apple trees and two pear trees. So we cleaned out one of the apple trees. The apples were ripe in that tree. The other tree, we decided to give it a couple more weeks just to let those apples ripen a little bit more. She has a fireside apple and a prairie spy tree, but she doesn't. The thing is, she doesn't know which is which. After we did that, we picked the one apple tree clean. We went back to my place, and we pressed apples. We had an assembly line going where one person was chopping and one person was grinding, and then we were getting them into the press, and my kids helped turn the cranks on the press and press the juice, and we ended up with 4 gallons of fresh
child labor.
Oh yeah, no, they were having a great time.
Sure they were.
We ended up with 4 gallons of fresh pressed apple cider that is
nice.
Now fermenting in my basement right now.
Ooh.
Yeah, really, really looking forward to that. In a couple weeks, we are going to get the other apple tree and the pear trees picked clean, and we'll start making more cider with the other, and then make some perry, which I'm really looking forward to. But the pear is going to be hard because the pear trees that she has were in a... there's a maple tree that's been there for a really long time that was kind of over it. And so the pear tree, in order to get to light, had to go really high. And so all of the pears are like at the top of the tree.
Oh my god.
Like the bottom branches of this pear tree are already 8 feet off the ground. And then these pears are at the top of that tree. So it's going to be a real work to get these pears off that tree. But once we do and we have Perry, so that's what I did, is we pressed apples and made cider out of it. The other thing is my wife's mother had a black walnut tree that had been felled in her backyard. And so my brother-in-law and I divvied that up. So I ended up with 6 2-foot logs, roughly, of black walnut. And I got home, and on Sunday I started turning bowl blanks on my lathe for that, to make bowls out of the black walnut. And I was having a fan-fucking-tastic time making cider and making, you know, bowls out of wood on my lathe, and I was having a grand old time, and then my lathe chisel rest broke.
Which is a pretty integral part of being able to make things.
Yeah, you really can't do anything without the chisel rest, and so I'm just fucked.
Question.
Yes.
What is a chisel rest?
Okay, so on a lathe, you've got the part that spins, and you've got the tools that are the chisels that you hold with your hands that actually make cut into the wood.
Right.
If you were just holding the chisel free with just your hands, the spinning force of the wood hitting it would make it fly all over the place. You wouldn't be able to control it. So there is a rest. There's a metal piece that is, it's adjustable, and you put it up against the side of the wood, and that is you rest the chisel on that. So when the wood hits the chisel, instead of just your hands holding it up, it's being hit into the chisel rest.
Mm-hmm.
So the chisel rest holds it steady.
Kind of like a stabilizer?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because like I've done ceramics, and I've heard comparisons between like throwing clay on a wheel and having to have the hand steady. And there are cheats for how to do that on a wheel.
Mm.
Basically, you rest your arms on like the side of the wheel, like in or something like that. There are also like arm things you can get for when you're working with that.
Certainly, yeah. There are definitely, you know, it's a circular action, you know, and so there are obviously some similarities there, but the big difference comes in is A, wood is just a lot harder, and B, it's spinning it a lot faster. So you know, you need something to brace the chisel against, so that when the wood scrapes against it, it stays in one place. So without that, there is no turning of wood. It's just not.
Yeah.
So the problem is they don't make this lathe anymore. I bought this from a friend who had got it at like an auction or something like that. They haven't made this model of lathe in like 50 years, literally. Like I tried to get parts for it already, and they just don't exist anymore. So I'm kind of fucked, you know, which is depressing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've already talked to him, and he says he's going to come over and we'll try to like see if we can't repair it or come up with some sort of solution, but I don't have high hopes for it, honestly. It might be just time to say, well, this was a good starter lathe, but now it's time for me to upgrade to, you know.
Time to get a full shopsmith.
Yeah. Something.
Ooh.
But I struggled with being kind of depressed about that for the past.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
That's fair.
But today we you know, in the morning we took the kids over to the tennis courts a couple blocks from our house and played tennis with the kids for a little bit. And by play tennis we mean introduce the kids to the concept of tennis and had them hit balls around a little bit.
Right.
But
yeah. Obviously.
I think it's something that we might sign my son up for come spring.
Okay.
My mom tried to get us tennis lessons, and
So this has been discussed before, but my son has only one testicle, and so a lot of sports like soccer or gymnastics or skateboarding, which have high levels of
high testicle
impact,
fatality,
would not be good for him. So we want to find a sport, you know, that he would enjoy and but mm-hmm. would also have a lower chance of him not being able to have kids if he wants to someday. So
sure.
So yeah, we're thinking of tennis might be the way to get, because there's running around and there's hitting things, which sounds like right up his alley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but that's what we did today, and it was nice. Good.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what we did, and we should probably take a break because this is getting a little long already.
Sure. Sure thing.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back in a little bit.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Patton was kind enough to give us the music for this episode and every episode. You can see what he's up to at brandonpatton.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, but especially you can help us out by rating our show. Check out our merch. You can go to society6.com/AON podcast.
That was horrifying. Let's not post that. I'm kidding. I don't care.
When was the last time we posted something awful?
About 3 seconds ago. Welcome back. This is the podcast. I'm Salsa.
I'm James.
And I'm Jenna.
Nicely done.
James.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Tell us a story.
There is a show from my childhood that is extremely near and dear to my heart that I am now introducing someone to, called Jim Henson's The Storyteller. Are you both familiar?
Oh, yes, I am. I own it. I own it, bitch.
Yep.
Yee.
I think we should talk about it.
Yeah. I think it's... A fucking
we still have them in VHS,
show.
And we can't watch them because we can't watch VHS.
No, I went and I got DVDs when I got rid of my VHS
nice.
Player. That's important shit, yo.
Nice.
I should do the same thing with this really fucking not good movie from my childhood called Mio in the Land of Far Away. It
Did
is.
He just tangent himself.
I believe the first movie with Christian Bale.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's terrible.
Anyway, storyteller.
Yeah. So, Jim Henson's The Storyteller was a super important series to me when I was little. And it's weird. I watched so much television, but this is something that has always stuck with me as being really excellently crafted and kind of started me wanting to be a writer, and I love it. I love the language of it that they use to tell the stories. Completely aside from the beautiful puppet work and you know, everything like that, like it's the acting and the voices and everything like that. It's all great, but it's so good. And I very clearly remember that it was around this time, like toward the end of this first season, that Jim Henson died, which may have been part of its impact on my childhood, but I just remember being very excited to see the next episode every time. So yeah, the first episode is a classic Russian folktale, but it goes through a series of different European classics for the mm-hmm. first season, and then I think the second season is all Greek myths.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Which was my introduction to much of that, much of the Greek myths. So it's extremely exciting.
Also, I've always wanted to live in the storyteller's hut.
Yes. Oh, that big
warm
fire.
I have a house.
Fire.
That's just going to be my aesthetic.
I'm okay with this. Yeah.
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 Well, it reminded me of Irish Cottage,
mm-hmm.
which was where I was working at the times that I was, you know, going through all of this. Because yes, it was childhood, but I'm a few years older than you. And yes, Cottage was a big part of my childhood, and then Storyteller was showing, and I'm like, oh wait a minute, oh this is home.
Oh,
I know, right?
Well, and they've got
I apologize.
They've got Roisin, the storyteller, was there very frequently in years when Fest was happening, and it was I think it's an absolutely phenomenal tradition. It was something that made me want to read all kinds of different folk tales to my nephew. And to look up super weird ones, like the Magic Turtle Wife, which is an amazing fairy tale. But yeah, I think they did a great job, and it stuck with me and made me very curious about not only hearing lots of Aesop's fables and lots of short stories and things like that, but it also may have given me my first interest in reading, because I didn't want to just hear the stories. I wanted to read them, and I wanted to tell them. So, yeah. How about you folks? What were some extremely formative shows from your various childhoods?
She-Ra.
Fair.
It was considerably less gay back in the 80s, but still chick with a sword, pretty fucking formative for me.
I know that you say that it was less gay.
Was it?
I mean, He-Man was slightly more gay.
That's true.
She-Ra was more independent woman than gay specific, although very much so needed in the time of She-Ra in the 80s. So, yeah. She-Ra is seeing a woman. So, okay, let's have some tropes.
Okay.
Let's play around with women fighter tropes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There is the idea of the scantily clad woman with the sword, which is more of a fetishization of a woman fighter.
Sure. Yeah.
There are women that are in like super combat capable, whatever, but they tend to get played as less feminine. Mm-hmm. They spit more. They tend to be more rough overall. And what I loved about She-Ra is that She-Ra allowed me to continue to feel feminine, but still be a fighter. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have to ascribe to... I know that her outfit wasn't necessarily the most fighting armory type thing, but she's also a magical being, so fuck it. But like, it allowed me to see somebody that was both strong in fighting and feminine at the same time. And that was huge for my development. Because I'm not very burly.
Sure.
I don't know if you guys knew this about me. Not really burly, like manly kind of a thing. In stereotype, but I am, even though I am very feminine, I am very capable of fight stuff, and a lot of people would not fight me because they would lose, James. So I only say that because you have lost fights to me.
Don't fuck with the King of the Phoenix.
Right. Yeah. Jenny Young, King of the Phoenix. But it helped basically give me an idea of what that could look like. I'm not very feminine in that I don't really wear sundresses or a lot of makeup or things like that. But I can still be, so it's not quite as feminine the way She-Ra was feminine and played with swords, right? Like it's a different form of feminine, but it still gave me kind of like a guideline. And She-Ra is a very compassionate character. So it's okay to not only be gorgeous and be a fighter, but also be compassionate at the same time. And that's like all of that. That whole combination for me was just like, hello, my role model. Like, you know what I mean? Just like, oh, this is, a person can be all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was very big for me. Shira was very big and very formative when we're talking TV shows. Mm-hmm. I also loved the Ninja Turtles.
Sure.
But it wasn't as formative in the ways that Shira was, but it did expose me to different fight styles, which I liked.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I've always had an obsession with fighting. Who knows?
Story checks out.
But yeah, so those are TV shows. Now, if you want to get into 80s movies, boy howdy, we can get into that. But I should let Salsa talk about his formative TV shows before I just start pissing all over this.
No, it's okay, honestly, because I don't know how much answer I'm going to have here. I honestly don't. I had shows that I enjoyed as a kid, but to say it's a formative show, I don't know as I can really say that, because honestly, I completely reinvented myself when I was in, you know, like, Europe. I didn't come back the same person. Like, that was my formative. Like everything up until that point, I really can't think of anything that I can make a direct line to, like, James, you know, watch this and that made him want to be a storyteller, and you watch this and that makes you want to, you know, be a sword person who's still feminine. And I really can't think of anything that I, like, watched as a kid that made me go, the person I was my senior year of high school and the person I was my first year of college after living in Europe for a year was not the same person at all.
Sure.
You know, so, and I mean, obviously everybody goes through changes and stuff like that, everybody, but I mean, like, no overlap. The Venn diagram was completely, completely broken.
That's fair.
And so,
I mean, I definitely went through some major changes when I had Jessa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were some very dynamic shifts in my personality and goals.
But I mean, like, before I had, I was a farm kid who lived in a small town, and that was my world, and I was considering going into either the priesthood or a monastery, to an atheist with a big smile and a sense of humor and, you know, an outgoing personality, and all of that is completely 180 degrees difference.
Sure.
And so I'm, like, trying to think of something that was a formative, something, like, show from my youth, and I just really can't think of one. Like I said, I have shows I enjoyed. I loved Rocky and Bullwinkle. But I'm looking at it going, is there any personality that I have that is... that I like
sense of humor, maybe,
but I didn't really think about that until I was in I had already joined the Renaissance Festival and thought vilification tennis was funny as hell, and that's why I tried out for Vil. That was my first time that I ever thought maybe I'm gonna give this comedy thing a try.
Oh no, was vilification tennis your formative show? Oh, Salsa.
Oh,
I mean,
sweetie.
Oh, God.
In many ways, yes, that is actually true. Vilification Tennis was a very formative show for me.
Mm.
Vilification Tennis absolutely gave me a lot of where my sense of humor comes from. It gave me a lot of the philosophy you know, a lot of the sense of carefulness around comedy. You know, that I have.
Sure.
So, yeah, Vilification Tennis is probably the most formative show I can think of for my... But again, it really wasn't a youth thing. Like, I don't know. I'm really struggling with this one, honestly.
Was it Vilification Tennis that made you... that encouraged you to be a performer? Or was it The Muppets?
No, I had no interest in being a performer or an artist of any shape or form. Was not something that I really thought about until I had already joined Fest. Like I joined Festival in college because a friend of mine worked at Como Cottage, and I thought Renaissance Festival, that sounds rad as shit. And she was like, yeah, if you want to come work for Como Cottage, you'd work two-hour shifts and then you get to just run around the rest of the day. And I was like, that sounds awesome. And so I did that. And then once I was out at the Renaissance Festival at the age of 18 or 19, I think at this point, maybe even 20, that a lot of my formative years was that first year at Festival. That's where a lot of what I am today comes from. That's where I went, oh, performing, that sounds like a thing I could do. Art, that seems like a thing I could do. Comedy, that seems like a thing I could do. That's where a lot
you
of that
were only
came
wrong
from.
About one of them.
It never crossed my mind to do comedy or art or performance of any sort up until that point.
That's so fucking wild to me. That's like that of any fact I have learned about you as a person, that is the one that surprises me most.
In high school I was a country boy who listened to country music and was in, I suppose I was in show choir, which is I guess a performance aspect.
But it was
I didn't think of it that way. It was just choir.
Choir isn't really the most it is definitely a performance, but it's not like the whole point of choir is to mesh and blend with everybody around you to produce a unified sound.
And I also want to stress that yes, I was in show choir, but the show choir that I was in was like scissor step. Jazz hands, you know, like it was real fucking rudimentary. This was not like your Broadway show choir shit. This was like people who had 5 weeks to learn some basic dance steps and sing at the same time. And I did it because my mom was a music teacher.
Yeah, well, all right.
You know,
fair enough.
So I don't know. I'm really struggling with this one.
I'm willing to say that Ville 10 was your formative show. That's fucked up, man.
In many ways, absolutely was.
It's probably very similar for Jessa, actually.
Oh no!
No, absolutely. Ville 10. A lot of the stuff I know today, like I said, my comedy philosophy and my ability to get on stage. And you know, stagecraft and stage awareness and stuff like that came from doing Ville. So, yes, it was.
Yeah.
Which maybe explains a lot
about
me.
So, yeah.
Because, boy, howdy. You guys, so for my birthday, I figured it out. Because we can't people right now easily, anyway. So for my birthday, I'm going to do a weekend-long 80s movie marathon. And so here's the thing, is that I fucking love 80s movies. I absolutely love them.
They're pretty great.
Me and Gord's first date, where we made out a lot, I feel like it's our first date. Like, he invited me to go to a party with him, and so we, like, did that. But, like, I didn't go over to his place afterwards or anything. No, like, the first time I actually, like, went over to Joe's, and I was like, nope, we are on a date, was I went over to his place, and we watched Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Fuck, yeah. That is the 80s. Powerfully the 80s.
So good.
So much 80s. It was either that or... Yeah.
See them driven before you and hear the lamentations of their women.
Yes. So Conan the Barbarian is definitely, that's a more recent, about 3 years ago, kind of a special thing for me. I mean, we didn't, we, it played until the end, but we didn't watch it until the end. Yo. Yeah. So anyway, but
call this position the Riders of Doom.
But like the first movie that I remember seeing in a theater of any kind was The Princess Bride.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Solid.
And there is so much in The Princess Bride that spoke to me. There was, I was unhappy about the princess's lack of strength.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, why doesn't she just beat up the prince? Like, she doesn't want to be there. Why doesn't she just beat him up? But anyway, aside from that, like, you know, the whole Dread Pirate Roberts thing. The Princess Bride still has the best sword fight ever.
Mm-hmm.
In any movie ever. It's just, it's perfect. It's just perfect.
No, it's phenomenal.
It is.
There was that. There was specific humor things. There was pacing stuff. There was fairy tale. There was all of these elements that were, it was, I think, I guess it's fair to say the movie was very well-rounded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's kind of a driving thing for me, is I like to be well-rounded. And so I think there was definitely this idea of, specifically through Wesley, that you can be capable at more than one thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Like, he was an incredible swordsman. He was very intelligent. He was tricky. He mm-hmm. was resourceful. He was, you know, all of these things.
Yeah, right, yeah.
He was feared, he was loved, and I took that whole being both feared and loved thing and just ran with that, but
played the long game.
So I think, like, Princess Bride was big for me. Labyrinth is where I mm-hmm. discovered I was bisexual.
Makes sense.
Jennifer
Connelly in Labyrinth made me feel funny. In places as a kid.
Yeah, she sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, howdy.
And The Rocketeer, yeah.
Let's see, what else? I loved Willow, but that wasn't really as formative as it was just...
God damn, is that a good movie?
It's just a good movie.
It is.
All four of these, actually, will be in my 80s movie marathon. I love 80s movies. They almost always have heart. Mm-hmm. If they don't have heart, they are so very ridiculous that there's just no fucking, it's silly and wacky.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times 80s movies are stupid, but they know that they're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of lean the fuck into it. A lot of 80s horror is the kind of horror that I like.
Oh, whoa, yeah.
Because it's a lot more psychological. Except for The Mist. Fuck The Mist. I hate that movie. It's so well done. I'm still angry about that. Ooh, buddy.
Hmm.
but, like, I can't think of the director right now. Breakfast Steven, Club, 16 Candles.
John something.
I don't. It's the Brat Pack. I've never known the director's name. It's Brat Pack.
No, Jenna's right. And you know, in any other moment, I would probably be able to recall it. But I am also
driving me insane. Anyway, but that style of movie was very much so a style that not only that director did, but a lot of the other directors mimicked, and
John Hughes. That's the one.
Yep. And it was so much about establishing inner character relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And those movies, like, none of them were 100% stellar, but it was so much about the inner relationship and the journey aspects that, like, just kind of twisted and tied together. It was and it is a very specifically 80s style movie. Then you have things like Big Trouble in Little China and like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Back to the Future, and just stupid, ridiculous scenarios that explore technology and mythology and interconnectedness. It's kind of like the 80s, because we had so much new technology coming out that there was this kind of push-pull between the technology aspects and exploring what technology could be, and still trying to hold on to mythology and make that still exist within the technology world. That style of movie was fantastic. Oh man, there's so much good schlocky stuff in the 80s.
Like Last Starfighter and The Wizard and
Oh my god, The Wizard.
Tron.
Oh, buddy.
It's just a cornucopia of good.
It is.
It has so many different areas of good, and all of them being very specifically 80s style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like there's the overarching the 80s, but then there are different styles within the 80s that are very unique to the 80s, and it's just, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm going to do an 80s movie marathon.
I think that's a killer plan.
Over my birthday weekend.
Nice. Yeah.
And we're going to watch a fuck ton of 80s movies.
Are you...
Huh?
Are you planning to group them by genre or director?
So here's the deal. I looked at 80s movies, and I wrote out a bunch of 80s movies, and I hadn't even finished my list. And I was like, I'm going to have to narrow this down to something.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I was only going to do 80s movies that were fantastical, whether it's magic or sci-fi or something.
Sure.
Something outside of, which means I can't have any Hughes movies, which, yeah, whatever. Mm. I'll get over it. But I was like, I need to reduce this down somehow. So I did that. And then I wrote out all of the fantasy and sci-fi movies that I had to have in this weekend, and figured out their run times. And it was over 50 hours. And I was like, I am not doing a 50-hour comedy marathon this year. That's not happening. I'm not doing a 50-hour marathon.
Right.
There is no nonprofit for which this all goes towards. So, so I'm trying to cut it down from there.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was like, "Oh, well, you should just do your favorites." And I'm like, "These are my favorites.
Right.
I don't understand where you think I'm going to trim the fat from, because there is no fat." So I'm having a hard time boiling it down. I know that there will be Conan the Barbarian, Labyrinth, Princess Bride, Willow, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Back to the Future, Big Trouble in Little China, Gremlins, Aliens, because Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do Return of the Jedi. And then like there's more that I'm like, I absolutely have to have these things, but those are the ones that I was like, absolutely, these things are happening.
Top Gun.
Nope. It's not fantastical.
Oh,
isn't it?
Okay.
No. Well, it has nothing to do with magic or sci-fi.
So Goonies.
Maybe.
Ooh.
Goonies. Goonies actually wasn't my favorite 80s movie.
Really? Beetlejuice.
I enjoyed it. I'm not doing Beetlejuice because it's gross and creepy now.
Neverending Story.
Neverending Story is on my list of things that I would like
Good.
To incorporate.
Yeah.
Lost Boys.
Not actually one of my.
Really?
Isn't that a 90s film?
I believe Lost Boys is an 80s movie. From 87.
Yeah, I'm like, I think Salsa's right. It does feel like a 90s movie.
Oh, Legend.
Right.
Debating it.
Oh.
The only reason to watch Legend, in my opinion, is to see Tim Curry.
That's play reason enough.
Which should be reason enough, but I don't know if I can get that much time out of my movie marathon. Just for that. Like, you should You should definitely watch Legend to see Tim Curry prance around in Hooves and Horns.
Oh,
buddy.
Devil voicing it up everywhere. Oh.
Oh, my God. It's so good. It's so good. But, like, that's only so much of the movie, and I can't justify dedicating all of that time to Legend.
Weird science.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that a John Hughes movie that deals with science fiction?
It does. And it is on the list. I have some concerns with the premise.
It is problematic.
Right.
Right. There's a couple that are kind of problematic that I'm like, Then again, the 80s were also kind of problematic.
Oh my God. Lady Hawk.
It is definitely on the list.
Yes.
I'm so excited to see this list.
Lady Hawk is one of my just... Oh, I love that movie so much.
It's Matthew Broderick at his fucking best.
Just front to back, Matthew Broderick kills in that movie.
And I feel like I have to include that one because I can't include Ferris Bueller's Day Off. There could be an argument made that it is fantastical because there's no way to do all of that in the amount of time that they did all of that, but that's a real tenuous claim.
Highlander?
Yep.
Good.
That's a for sure. Mm-hmm. I did the fight choreography for Highlander the Musical.
Last
so
Starfighter.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That came to mind.
Okay. I hadn't thought on that one.
There's just so many fucking good 80s movies. It's so hard.
You see my problem.
I
do. You see my problem.
I absolutely do.
Oh. God. So yeah, Highlander's on there. I'm debating things like Time Bandits and Ice Pirates.
Sure.
I'm fairly confident I'm going to do Framed Roger Rabbit.
Ice Pirates is so funny.
It's a weird side tangent on Fantastical, but I feel
it
like
is.
It fits my definition.
Dragon Slayer?
It is.
It's debatable.
Okay.
Or it's in the debate. But you see, like, there's some that I'm like, I absolutely have to have these, and there's some that I'm just like, I really, 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 really want to have these.
Yeah.
And it's choosing.
I do not envy you the choices.
I mean, I did this to myself.
Yeah.
There was the version of the Canterville Ghosts, Canterville Ghost from 1986 with Alyssa Milano. Which was a movie that I watched a bajillion times.
It's not on my list, and I'm not going to put it on my
list
because, I haven't seen it, so I don't care. I probably will see it at some point, though, now that I know that it exists.
There's also a version starring Patrick Stewart.
Ooh. Okay, well, now you've sold me.
Yeah, good.
Dragonheart was 90s, wasn't it?
What was?
Dragonheart was 90s,
Okay. Yep.
Firmly.
Yeah.
Firmly 90s.
Firmly 90s. Firmly 90s is the name of my 90s cover band.
Firmly 90s is a great name for a bar.
Ooh.
Wait.
Well, I mean, there's gay 90s.
It's a gay bar, Pamela.
Accurate.
Listeners, you should tell me what you think I should have in my movie marathon. I can probably only do about 16 movies if I really push it.
One for each candle.
Huh?
One for each candle.
Sure.
I get this
definitely 16.
Oh, don't even give me that tone of voice, James. Don't even start.
But you listeners, do not get to do that. I would love to hear your listings and your arguments for what I should have on my 80s movie marathon and why.
And what were the parameters again? It had to be fantastical?
It's basically, it has to have a fantastical element, and I have to decide I'm going to do it.
Okay.
It's basically what it is. Like,
fair enough.
Yeah. Like, and there's, I just want to hear now.
Fair enough.
I want to hear it.
All right.
Tell me.
So leave those comments on the Facebook feeds of this episode. If you are not on Facebook for some reason, by all means, go to send an email to Jenna@a1podcast.com.
And one email, Mav. That.
Yeah, this isn't a fast five. Just fucking send
Mav.
One email.
Mav. Mav. I have ways, Mav.
We're going to take a break. That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
Yee.
Hey, everybody. You should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter at AON Podcast. Or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for apropos of nothing.
If you guys like what you heard, you can visit us on our website at aonpodcast.com. If you want to talk to us directly, you can send us an email at either Jenna, Salsa, or James at aonpodcast.com, or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
It was very touching.
Weird, I didn't feel anything.
No, you never do.
Oh my god.
You monster.
And we're back. Wow. I'm Salsa.
did you James? I don't know if you Jamesed or not.
Try it again.
I'm James.
And I'm Jenna.
He was mid laugh. It was hard to catch.
Oh my god.
And we should do a
fast
five.
Here's the thing, Salsa. Ahead. Like, I like that you do that, and I like that you catch James off guard. That's the only reason why I like that you do that. Otherwise, it annoys the piss out of me. And if you didn't catch James off guard so often, I would have a serious conversation with you. But because you are able to delight me in James's confusion and laughter, I'm okay for it. It's all right. It's acceptable.
Good.
You're welcome.
How about a fast five?
What?
How about a fast five?
Fast five.
Fast five.
Today's fast five comes to us from Dennis Zastara.
Zastara.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Wow. That was
awful. All right.
I'm sorry, Dennis. I would like to apologize.
This does not reflect poorly upon you, but poorly upon us.
This is not about you. It is about us and technology, but mostly us.
Our beloved Dennis is working on a Three Wishes drink for us.
Wait, pause. I have concerns.
I also...
If there is Malort, I will veto it right out.
They are a generous person, but they are also the source of the Malort experience.
Yes.
So I have concerns.
Look,
yes,
even if you claim for science, I will declare myself a religious exemption and say no Malort.
Oh. That's hilarious. Oh my god. You guys, Mert has started tagging me in posts where they say in the year of Jenna's Lord.
That is amazing.
I don't remember if that was caught on the episode.
I'm pretty sure it was, but
it went out. I'm getting to know so many things about just like in the year of Jenna's Lord 2020, and I'm like, oh my god,
that's so amazing.
I'm so amused. I love it. Anyway, continue.
Dennis says, good evening, apropos.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. We're getting combative right off the bat.
Ooh.
It says here, I quickly put together this quintet quiz for your suffering and my enjoyment.
Hmm.
Story checks out.
All right. Question number one. Oh, you fucker. Candy corn or circus peanuts?
Which candy that I love is the worst?
Oh.
I'm going to say more people that I've spoken to commiserate with my love of candy corn than my love of circus peanuts. I feel like my love of circus peanuts puts me into a much smaller demographic.
Which one would make the tastier 70s Jell-O concoction?
Oh. Ugh. And your answer is?
I feel like circus peanuts really lends itself to the 70s.
I'm for it.
I prefer candy corn. But I feel like circus peanuts are just they encapsulate the 70s recipe so well.
I'm going with circus peanuts because thus far nobody has sent circus peanuts to me anonymously via the flower sellers at Fest.
Oh.
Thus far.
Yeah.
Everyone take note.
I need to find a way to make flowers out of circus peanuts.
Candy corn, this has happened. And so I'm going with circus peanuts.
All right.
Hmm. I recently bought a bag of candy corn.
All right, and question number two. Straw or felt? I'm guessing hats. Hmm. This sounds like a hat question.
It does sound like.
Yeah.
If I'm at Fest, straw.
Yep.
Because it's so breathable, it's so good. But pretty much any other hat occasion is going to be a felt situation. I had a date like that once. It is actually where the term old hat came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yep. If she is old hat, she is felt.
Oh.
Felt, James. James, this is for you. This is a very specifically James type. It is a pun insult. And I can't.
It's a pun insult?
Pun insult. Yes. I don't know if any of that's true. That's just what I've heard. But I believe it because I would do that.
I lean towards. I lean towards straw in the summer and felt in the winter.
Hmm.
But I think the hats that I have for summer are a bit more common. Like my fancy hats are my winter hats, my felt hats.
Huh.
So I'm gonna go with the felt.
I don't think I've ever had a felt hat. In memory, but I've definitely had a straw hat, so I have to go with that.
I bought a new hat just today.
Ooh!
I bought a new linen trilby.
Mm-hmm. You bought a okay.
I saw that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yep,
it's a nice little hat. Question number three.
There we go.
A pleasant little number or a delightful romp?
Oh. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone of my own acquaintance use a pleasant little number, but I have definitely heard people say a delightful romp.
Would you rather listen to music or watch a movie when passing the time.
You think that's...
That's what I've decided.
Staring down?
A delightful romp to me is like... That's like a thing that you say about movies. Right?
Sure. Sure. I think I would rather be described as the first rather than the second.
Baby, we all know I'm a delightful romp. Anyway,
that's what I've heard.
Yeah. No, I think I'm gonna say it's music or movies. And I generally prefer to watch movies to pass the time. Like if I'm actively trying to pass time.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, music I use more for having in the background while I'm doing stuff.
Sure.
So I think, unless I'm in a car. But no, I'm gonna say movies. I'm gonna say delightful romp.
I'm going to say that. Owing to the fact that a romp can also refer to sexy times, I'm going with a delightful romp.
Fair enough.
Question number four!
Jenna's just dancing over there.
Question number four.
Bing.
Sprite or 7-Up?
Sprite.
7-Up.
See, I primarily drink Sprite when I do drink soda these days, but 7-Up is the OG. Gotta give it to 7-Up.
I have so many reasons for this.
It's the spot. It's because of the spot.
The spot? The commercials with the spot were better.
Yeah.
The video game with the cool spot is better.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even think there is a Sprite video game, so what the fuck ever. There are two with the 7-Up cool spot.
Mm-hmm.
Heads up, 7-Up.
Well, yeah. There's that also. 7-Up, for me, is not as like sickeningly sweet. It's more citron than like gooey, syrupy, sweet. The last one is that my parents used to have glasses, which were promotional glasses. They looked like the soda fountain glasses, but they were upside down. Mm. The mouth of the glass was closed off and was the bottom, and then the narrow part, what ordinarily would have been the bottom of the glass, was open to drink from, and the logo was upside down, but then the motto above the logo was right side up, and it said 7-Up, the Uncola.
Yep. Sounds like a nightmare to clean, too.
Possibly.
It's a 7-7, not a 7-in Sprite.
What?
A 7-7. Seagram 7 Crown and 7-Up. It is a awful, shitty cocktail. When you are 16 years old raiding your parents' liquor cabinet is what you get.
It's not that bad. I honestly don't mind it. 7-Up was
Now I don't trust it.
The name of an annoying fairy companion from Zelda. But Sprite was.
Alright. Mm. I think we have made our choice. Question number five. Rocinante.
Ooh.
Or Sleipnir.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
What are these?
One more time, Jenna?
I don't understand. I don't know these words.
Okay, so Rocinante was the horse of Don Quixote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Also a spaceship.
And Sleipnir was this horse of Odin.
Yes. Okay. Yes, with eight legs.
Yes, and it was eight-legged horse of Odin.
Incredibly fast, as fast as the wind.
I want an Odin horse.
Yeah, and Rocinante was famously worn down and...
Was a nag, yeah.
So, Sleipnir.
Yeah.
But in terms of the Rocinante from The Expanse, Rocinante is an amazing ship on The Expanse. There's a certain romance to the idea of, you know, the like of to the idea of Don Quixote.
I mean,
so maybe that
being certifiably insane does have a bit of romance to it. Yeah, one could look at this as going, would you rather, you know, take it slow and easy or rush ahead and get there fast? I'm still going Sleipnir.
I have never in a game that I played a lot of where you could build your own giant robots, I never named one of them Rocinante, but I did name one of them Sleipnir.
Well, there you go.
So I have to go with that.
All right. Dennis finishes out this email by saying, see you on the other side, Ray.
I get it. All right. Oh, also Ghostbusters is totally on my list.
Yes. Awesome. All right. Second email starts by saying, dang, friendos and salsa.
Oh, Dennis.
When you put out the urgent request for Fast Fives, I really can't front-load all the fun and silly banter before the fun really begins. Candy corn or peanuts? Oh, fuck. Which will salsa hate more while eating, to raise money during Die Laughing or give to the max?
Yes!
Oh, I love it when we get ideas for Die Laughing off this podcast.
Fuck, that's a thing now.
Yeah. <it
is. sighs>
Oh, no, I have an even worse, better idea. I have ideas. What if we made cocktails? Okay. One with candy corn and one with circus peanuts.
Yes.
I don't want salsa to die of alcohol poisoning, though.
I am so about
maybe,
this.
Maybe I'll ditch that one. Okay, we'll figure this out.
We'll talk
to Eric. He's in charge of challenges.
Whatever happens, I'm not happy about it.
Oh, no. That's not the point at all.
No.
It's not even that I want you unhappy. I just want to raise money for a good cause.
Me too.
And making you unhappy will raise money for a good cause.
Oh, I thought you were going to say is a good cause.
Porque no los dos. Question number two.
Yes.
Straw or felt? Which material is used in making dumber hats?
Oh, dumber hats.
The hat I wear is automatically dumber.
You don't really make a straw fez, so maybe felt?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to make a straw fez.
Hmm. For those summer months.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
I'm gonna make it. It'll be like weaving a basket, and then on the top, I'll have just like a tuft of yarn coming out of it, right? Like a tassel made of twine or some shit.
Corn tassel.
This might happen. This might have to happen.
Oh,
yeah,
gentlemen, remind me.
What?
I'll forget.
If the Shriners are the modern day reason for the existence of fezzes in the United States, what would the medieval Shriners be?
Actual shrine guards?
I suppose.
Ooh, there you go.
Ye olde Shriners. they drive miniature horses around the lanes.
No, you guys, instead of Shriners, they'd be Templars.
Oh, yes. I'm for this.
It's just a big misunderstanding of what Templars are.
This is tremendous.
So anyway.
Yeah,
I'm going to say felt. probably. There's just way more variety in felt. So you have more options for stupid.
I'm going to say whatever hat I wear is automatically dumber. And most of the time that I'm being especially stupid, it's a straw hat.
Fair enough. Question number three, a pleasant little number or a delightful romp. Which is the better way to describe a surprisingly good thing? I.e. a drink like sour apple pucker and cranberry juice, or a movie like The Last Witch Hunter? I would still go with delightful romp.
Yeah, I'm going to go with delightful romp. And James is going to debate this for the next 5 minutes.
I feel like pleasant,
delightful romp.
I feel like pleasant little number is infantilizing and diminishing in some ways.
I feel like it is too. Yeah, and that's what I feel like it's the difference between calling somebody a girl and a woman.
Yeah, I agree completely. That it feels
neither one of them is calling them a female, which is the ultimate gross. But girl still has its.
But I feel like pleasant little number is kind of demeaning in some way.
I don't have any good reason for it, but yeah.
No, neither do I. It's just kind of a gut thing. James?
Fair enough.
Okay. Sprite or 7-Up? Which is generally the better mixer? 7-Up.
7-Up.
No, I like Sprite, but I like sweeter things, so.
I feel like 7-Up has a more distinct citrus flavor.
I think the thing is that if I want, I normally, if I'm mixing anything with clear bubbles, like a Sprite, I'm not actually looking for the citrus. I'm looking for something that's more neutral and probably sweeter. If I want more of a kick behind whatever it is that I'm mixing, I'm going to use ginger ale.
But then, even then, I tend to choose a ginger ale that has more bite to it.
Oh, it's Seagram's, usually. I like Seagram's for mixing.
But that's not one of the options.
No, that's why I said Sprite.
All right.
I was just saying, to your point about the citrus.
Sure,
Yeah.
All right, and question number five, Rosinante or Sleipnir?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, what's the better name for a new transport? It's got to be Sleipnir. Sleipnir.
Yeah.
I mean, that's if it's for transport, reliable, fast transport. If I were naming a train, I might name it Sleipnir. But if it's like this is the boat that we're taking on an adventure, I would want it to be Rosinante. That's such a difficult question, but I did name a giant robot Sleipnir and
like
not Rosinante.
The boat you take for an adventure is not really called a transport usually. Transport in my mind implies like mass transit, like Greyhound.
Sure.
You know, would you call Greyhound's replacement Rosinante or Sleipnir?
Oh, I thought we were naming transporters.
It says a new transport.
As if Scotty was involved.
Scotty beamed me twice last week. It was wonderful.
Whoa. Oh my.
Did he spit on it first?
It was fast, so Sleipnir.
Oh, it's Spaceballs, come on.
Yep.
All right. Well, Dennis wraps this up by saying, love and cashews, Troy to Troy.
No!
What? I've got this,
you guys. Troy, 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 Zestera, Zestera, Zestera.
I'm confused. My sexual fantasies are called into question.
And then it says, P.S. Bye-bye, I love you, bye.
Bye-bye, I love you, bye.
All right. Thank you so much to Dennis Zestada, a.k.a. Zestada. Troy to Troy. I've never seen the two of them in the same room before, have you? For sending in that Fast Five. I think he just, or they just realized that they have slipped and revealed their secret identity, is what happened here.
They're both Bruce Wayne?
Yes, and have been this whole time. We just cracked that case. We're the Montoyas here, and we just solved this case. If you would like to send in a Fast Five, please send two emails to salsa@aonpodcast.com. The first one should obviously be nothing but the choices, and the second one repeat those choices, and then give us some context. Who has a shout-out?
I want to give a shout-out to Joe's neighbors.
Cool.
Gosh, they're nice people.
Oh, gosh, Garly G.
Oh, jizz. Oh, my.
Jizz?
Oh, no.
Jizz?
I don't even live there, and they're all like, oh, hey, it's Jenna. I know what her car looks like. She belongs here sometimes. Like, they're very sweet people. So, yeah, shout out to them. Also, that fried chicken was really good.
Chicken.
I'm going to give a shout out to Just For You Movers. Extremely affordable, and dang, I am continually shocked by how fast they move stuff and how just like careful and friendly and amazing they are. So they have Groupons, and they're wonderful, and I will probably continue to use them.
All right.
Yep.
I'm going to give my shout out to my mother-in-law. Not only did she supply us with many, many apples, and will be supplying us with more apples and pears in the very near future for the making of adult beverages, but also supplied me with a large amount of black walnut with which to make fun things. So that's pretty fucking cool. Who has a plug? I have one.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I am starting a new project. It is called Curtains Unfurled, The Craft of Creating Art, in which I sit down with other performers and artists and get very, very cerebral and granular about art and performing and stuff like that. Basically, this came about from me really loving having the conversations with James and Jenna and other Fest people, you know, especially like after a vilification tennis match or something like that, where we talk about just like, oh, this one joke was really good, but if you just tweaked this word here and maybe paused a little bit longer here or use this slightly different gesture here, it would make the joke better. And really, really like bead down on very, you know, specific details about really making something better. And I just always loved those conversations. So I wanted to have those conversations with other people who also like to overthink their stuff and record it. So I should be recording my first episode in just a couple days here. In the meantime, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/curtainsunfurled. And there'll be a link in the show notes as well. And as episodes come out, I'll be telling you all about those. So keep a lookout for that. Either one
nice.
Of you?
Yes. The 11th. The evening of the 11th will be a vilification Tennis Interruptus show, and I encourage everyone to attend, of course. It's flippin' fantastic, and I'm going to get to enjoy watching Vil 10. I'm not in this one, and they just get better and better.
Right? Anything else, Jenna?
Nope.
All right. In that case, I think we're all done here. Thank you to everybody who has been listening to these episodes. Thank you to Dennis Zestada for the Fast Five. We've already done it. Not now. Now is not the time, James. on behalf of myself and James and Jenna.
Oh, I love you, bye.
Eat the fucking cake.
Take it away, Salsa.
Cha. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. Verbal Jazz Fingers.
Verbal Jazz Fingers is the name of my new Led Zeppelin cover band.